Hi, today is January 28, 2018. This is Movies Podcast number 239. I'm Tyler Gossoward, my good friend John Westfall has a line of light going straight down the middle of his head. I should take a screenshot of this.
I'm one of those, I forget what the aliens were in Star Trek.
There was one with that stripe going right down the middle of the head. Not a lot of long topics today, except for maybe the last one, which I'm really interested in, John's topics. A couple of things I wanted to mention. I did get a new Audio Hijack software update notice just before we started this podcast, but I think I wisely chose not to upgrade it before we record a podcast. It says it's a major upgrade, so we'll see how that goes. I also am suffering from a cold or something, so
I don't want to upgrade your software while your own self is downgraded.
Yep, that's true. And my mute button is too slow to use, so I'm not going to use it. I'm using a a Snowball Yeti microphone, which is a nice mic, but the mute button's really sluggish. Mm-hmm. First thing I wanted to mention, probably not too much of interest to John, is Google Play now includes audiobooks. Now, Audible, which is owned by Amazon, pretty much owns this market, I think. I mean, for audiobooks, for commercial audiobooks. So, not too sure how much market share Google can expect to get from it, since Audible works fine on Android devices. I think it's going to kind of be like Google Plus, where there's a, you know, kind of a dedicated core fan base, but not really enough to make a difference. Do you do audiobooks, don't you, John?
I do on occasion. I've been doing podcasts a lot more in the last few years, but I used to be a very big audiobook listener, and Audible was the place to go for that. Now you can buy audiobooks in different places. In fact, there are some libraries you can even rent audiobooks from. So there's a lot of different things you can do today to get audiobook content. So another one I don't think will hurt anything, but you're right. Audible has this market a bit locked up. So
I think public libraries have a system for temporarily downloading and listening to audiobooks. It's got a checkout, check-in kind of thing, so you don't have it forever, but still, price is right.
Although, I don't know, I cannot say that I've ever done this because that would be illegal and wrong, but most of the software they use for that downloads files in un-DRM protected content and then just deletes them when your time's up.
Yeah.
So if you know those files are on your computer, you could potentially extend your checkout.
Yeah, we
like I said, I will not claim that I have ever done this.
Continuing on with our Google topic, is Google announced in their blog that Google Files Go added three new features, and my commentaries, which are mostly useless. Three new features. Feature number one, SD card support. Let's see, how many phones have SD cards these days? None of the Google ones, the Pixels. So useless. I mean, if you have an older phone, sure. But if you have an older phone, you know, you have a lot of other problems because Google does not upgrade Android in those devices. Number two, tablet support. Again, useless because Android tablet has failed as a platform, unfortunately. I had high hopes for it, by the way. Mm-hmm. I didn't read about how it works on Chromebooks with the Android app support. So it's one of those things I guess I should look at. Even if it even makes a difference on Chrome OS. And third, you can now open files with other apps. Like, you can choose which app to open a PDF file with. And that took 10 years to figure out.
Only?
Yeah. So, you know.
They're moving real fast with that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. There was a, I don't know how fair it is, but there was a longtime engineer from Google. I think he was there 13 years, who recently quit to take another position elsewhere. And said that Google is not innovating anymore. And I don't know how true that is. I was trying to think back about what they're doing. And you know, they do some innovative stuff. But when it comes to the mobile space, you know, they've done incremental improvements to where Android in particular is quite good now. But, you know, things like this Google Files Go thing with their three new features that are useless, you know, makes you wonder how accurate his sentiment is. I kind of agree, actually.
I'll agree with that, and I'll extend it beyond just Google to most of the tech space. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how much they're innovating anymore. And that might simply be, and we've talked about this a few times, the fact that there aren't any major features that I can think of right now that I think if my phone only had blank, or if a phone on the market had blank, I would immediately jump to it. Well, we're getting to understand how people want to use their phones, and we're creating phones that fit those needs, and so I don't know what the next big jump's going to be.
Yeah, and you know, and to be honest, and I see your point, and I agree with it. I'd be okay if they fix stuff. Like, for example, if Apple fixed their terrible, terrible, terrible podcast app, that would be a good thing. I really haven't used Apple's new file app, so I'll withhold judgment on it, but that also took 10 years to develop. Mm-hmm. And Google Voice, you know, one of my favorite all-time services, which is must be over 10 years old now.
At least it seems like Google Voice must be the important linchpin in something, because otherwise it would have been pulled by now.
Yeah,
so
it's probably the basis for Google Duo or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And every now and then the app for iOS gets updated, so somebody somewhere is still thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a shame. You know, for example, if you have Google Voice, you can't take it to Google Fi. It destroys your Google Voice account completely. Deletes all the data. You know, the only thing you carry over is your phone number, so I didn't do that.
The funny thing about Google Voice is that it was posed to do what iMessage did in the Apple ecosystem 10 years ago.
Yep.
If Google had played it right, we'd all be... And, you know, I was watching a video this week that was shot at CES. A couple of the very popular video bloggers, people like Unbox Therapy and Marcus Brownlee and all those others, were talking about what phone they were using. They're all sitting around a suite in Las Vegas showing off what phone, and it came down to basically the Pixel 2 or the iPhone 10.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to listen to them talk about why they were on the iPhone, and many of the ones that said they were on iPhone was because of the ecosystem and iMessages and how that wasn't something they could get on Android, and they're used to getting messages on their computers, their Macs, on their tablets, on their phones. And even for non-iMessage users, if you are in the iMessage ecosystem, you can still forward text messages to your iMessage devices. So it almost, you know, the green bubbled friends of mine, almost it is no big deal that they're on green bubbles, because they still show up on my MacBook, they still show up on my iPad. Google Voice could have done all that 10 years ago without a problem, in that it had a web client, which is something iMessages still doesn't have, although it's a rumor that it's coming soon as a web client for iMessage. And the last thing I'll note, as I said, I mentioned I watched a video on this. It reminded me of a video that you shot at the MVP meeting.
Summit?
MVP Summit in 2009, where we all went around the room and talked about what phones we were using.
Oh, I remember that.
And so I reviewed that video, and at the time I was using a Samsung Omnia that had just come out recently. And it's interesting, you know, these are the young guys who were not doing anything blog-wise in 2009, and we were the old guys sitting there who were writing for different sites. We were not video blogging at all. So it was kind of interesting how times don't change too much. They did exactly what we had done. They just did it today, and we did it almost 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the one more thing, I just want to echo what you said, or support what you said. The web interface for Google Voice is gold.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to deal, you know, triage quickly with a full-size keyboard and a full-size screen through your text messages is awesome. And I can still do it because, you know, I created a second Google account just to move over to Fi, so I maintained my original Google account just to preserve Google Voice, which I still use. Mm-hmm. I can't use it on my Fi phone, but but it works fine on my iPhone, ironically enough.
Can you even sign into it in the app on the Fi phone?
No.
Like you download the Google Voice app?
Not through Chrome. If you use Chrome browser, you can't sign in. It'll tell you to go use Google Messages, but you can't fake it out by using a non-Chrome browser. But it doesn't work too well. Yeah. I should write an article about Google Fi and Google Voice someday. You know, it was one of the things I was going to do years and years ago when I was at Byte or someplace, wherever I was writing for, but never got around to. Next item, still more Google stuff, although this one includes Amazon in the mix. So Search Engine Land points to a research study that shows that Amazon's Echo owns 69% of the smart speaker market. And surprisingly, Google has 31% with its relatively recent entry for its Google Home series. I have the Google Home Mini. But, you know, if you add that up, it's 100%. So, you know, you wonder how much of that market share Apple's $349 HomePod is going to take. I'm not going to buy one. It's too expensive.
No, I'm not planning on one either. I don't really know what. Until Apple comes out with something that's a combination Apple TV HomePod.
Yeah.
Which you think is somewhere in the mix. Take an Apple TV, slap a HomePod on top of it, have it connect up to HDMI out, and it becomes basically whatever entertainment system you want. But I'm not really that interested in the HomePod by itself, although I do have hopes that it will make Siri better.
Well, one can only hope, because poor Siri has had some kind of brain disease for the last couple of years that has been deteriorating its ability to do pretty much anything. It used to be pretty smart before Apple bought it. It actually had features that I think it no longer has, like the ability to launch certain apps that it can no longer launch. But
I did get an update yesterday. I opened up the app that I used for sharing a shopping list with my wife and recipes and meal planning called AnyList, which I highly recommend. It's a great app. Oh, yeah. But now it updated to say that you can add things to AnyList from Siri. So slowly that integration is being rolled out. Different developers are adding it in. But until Siri can talk to all of the apps that I want it to talk to, and it can talk to list apps that are not reminders and things like that, I don't think she'll be as useful as we'd like.
Yeah. So the next item is, well, I don't know if I mentioned this before. And stop me if I did, John, but, you know, I'm getting older. I tend to repeat stories now. So a couple of weeks ago, right after I got the Google Home Mini in, or maybe not right after, but, you know, about a month or so after I got the Google Home Mini in, I was asking my Echo a question. And, you know, I won't use the keyword, but to launch other people's Echo. But I asked my Echo a question about something, and as the Echo was starting to, just before the Echo started to answer, the Google Home Mini said, "I can answer questions too."
You have not told the story of how you shamed your Google Home Mini.
So I didn't tell you that one?
That is really interesting.
So and it's never done it since.
And maybe sad. And I don't really know what to say about it, but that is an interesting. That is a developer that was just fed up and programmed that rule in.
Yeah.
It's like, if you hear our competitor's name, you speak up and you tell that person that you could do things just as well as they can.
Yeah. And it was kind of sad, you know? It was like a younger sibling that was being ignored or something.
Hey, I can do that.
Yeah. And, of course, Siri being Siri said nothing.
Well, yeah. Siri's respectful like that.
I guess so.
Siri's not going to interrupt your conversation with another AI.
But I have never been able
to. That's how Apple would say it.
I've never been able to duplicate it, so I'm not exactly sure, you know, how to trigger it again. But it was kind of interesting. Okay, next on my list is a company I've never heard of before. So Strava, Strava. And they have kind of an activity heat map. So they track apparently all kinds of devices, including the iPhone, that has GPS data and people's, you know, walking and running and whatever activity. And they have created a worldwide heat map. Now, the interesting thing is, you know, most of us, well, I don't know about us, many of us probably turn off our phones and therefore the GPS when we take a flight, for example. But I'm going to say most of us don't turn off our Fitbits and other GPS. And my Fitbit doesn't have a GPS on it. But, you know, we generally don't turn off our Fitbit when we travel, you know, when we get on an airplane. And so you can see heat maps of basically plane flights, amongst other things. And, you know, ships, which doesn't really matter in terms of turning off your GPS. But if you go to Strava.com, you can read a blog about the heat map. It's not clear which devices they're tracking, but apparently it's a lot because they've got worldwide data. And you can zoom in on the map. You can actually search for places on a map and zoom into your locale if that's what you excuse me, if that's what interests you. Anyway, I found it really interesting, and I encourage people to just kind of take a look at this Strava.com, Strava, and take a look at what's going on in your neck of the woods in terms of activity. And that's all I got, John. I see you got some stuff. It was not an exciting week.
I have two things that are both of which I would consider public service announcements in a sense. One of the things, so I basically, because I am not fashion-minded in many ways, I wear either carpenter-style jeans on a daily basis or cargo pants, because I think my fashion sense died in about 2002, and I'm happy with that. But the thing that I realized yesterday or the day before, the carpenter jeans I have from Lee, and we'll provide a link if you want to know exactly which ones, the side pocket that is on the right side, at kind of mid-thigh, so the thing that makes it carpenter style, is actually big enough that you can put an iPhone 10 without a case comfortably in it. You can also put an iPhone 10 inside the 12 South Book wallet case in there, and it fits kind of nice. So you have to, sometimes it hangs up a little as you're getting it out, but you get used to kind of the move to pull it in and out, which is really nice if you want to carry your book and you don't want it up in the regular hip pockets, or definitely not your back pocket where there might be a lot of stress on it. It's kind of the perfect spot for that. It's the same spot on carpenter pants or on cargo pants, where you typically have a pocket as well. So, I wanted to point that out. If anyone is looking for a pair of jeans and they don't want to have to carry their phone, they just want to put their phone in a pocket, but they're worried about the stress of the denim on their phone and device.
Yeah. Now, I have never ever carried a phone in my hip pocket. I just think that's nuts. But that said, I do notice a lot of people doing that. But on the other hand, I don't hear a lot of people with cracked phones from that behavior anymore. Do you think that Apple have strengthened their frame to the point where it's not a big deal?
Or perhaps
people are more careful than they appear to me?
I mean, hip pockets on regular pants, I don't think, provide any real strain onto the phone. It's only when you've got jeans where the pocket is offset a little bit more toward the middle, where your hand kind of has to reach over in front of you. And I think that's where it can get very stressed. Although I'm also a larger guy, and so, you know, everything is a little more strained sometimes on my clothing. But that was something I found interesting, I thought would be useful for others. The other thing is I bought a bag about two years ago now. I actually didn't buy it. ThinkGeek.com has a deal where if you buy enough stuff from them, you get geek points. And one day I was buying something and they said, hey, if you want to redeem your points, here's this, what they call the Bag of Holding Con Survival Edition. Like, con is in a conference or convention. And I thought, well, that looks kind of like a cool bag. And I always like bags. So I picked it up for literally free, just added it into my cart and redeemed my points. This bag is loosely, you can consider it an upright messenger bag in a sense. It opens, it's portrait orientation, opens at the top, has a handle at the top and a shoulder strap that goes, you can either carry it over your shoulder or you can carry it cross body. It has two pockets for water bottles on the side or other things you might have. And it fits a Surface Pro 4 plus an iPad Pro very nicely, the iPad 10.5-inch iPad Pro, very nicely. And it's what I use basically for my day-to-day commute. It's got a Velcro patch on the front so you can put patches and stickers and buttons and pins and anything else you might want on there. The reason I bring this up is that it was out of stock for probably almost a year on ThinkGeek's website. Because a few times I went back and thought, this is nice, I might buy it for someone, and it was continually out of stock. So it is marketed toward you could use it at a convention, such as a Comic-Con or something like that, because the front of it will actually hinge down, and you can put your iPad in a special vinyl pocket that you can use the iPad through, so kind of quickly referencing your schedule or anything like that. But it's a great little all-around bag, and for $34.99 from ThinkGeek, it's a fun one, too. So that's my other public service announcement. If you're looking for a relatively inexpensive, kind of cool little bag, I would recommend it.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of gadget people are also bag people, in my experience. And I know I've been trying to clean out some of my bag collection over the last couple of weeks, and it's hard. Because most of the bags are still good.
Yeah, I have the same thing. I've gotten rid of a few things just because I know that I, in some cases, I've kickstarted or Indiegogo'd other things that are going to take their place, and they need to clear out. But yeah, it's difficult, especially because when you buy a bag for a very specific purpose, even if that, even if you have a bag now that does that purpose better, it's still hard to look at and go, do I want to get rid of you? Because I remember when I bought you, this was exactly why I bought you.
Right.
Or this was the review I read. Or, for example, I've got Road Wired, if you remember them way back in the day. They had a bag called the Mega Media Bag. Huge bag. I mean, this thing, you can put full-size laptops into it. You can put any media you want. It's got a giant file folder pocket. Just big, big bag. I found it was originally, I think, $200 or something like that, and then there was a leather version that was $400 or $500.
Wow.
I found the leather version years ago on eBay for less than $200, so I picked it up. Then once I had that, I thought, well, I kind of would like to know what the neoprene, the regular version, is, so I found that one and picked it up. And now I have also the rolling bag, which is actually where I keep all my camera equipment, and it is Mega Media, and it's just as big except it has wheels on it. So I have all three of these bags. I don't use them ever. They are way too big. The camera equipment is nice in the one. That's where I have my DSLR and things like that.
Just for storage, not so much for transport.
Storage, although if I had to take it somewhere, it would be the bag I'd take it in. But it's one of those things of, I remember buying that bag. I remember reading reviews about it. I remember back in 2006, 2007, having to carry that much stuff that I would need that sort of size bag. So it's really hard for me to get rid of it, especially when, you know, limited editions, the company does not produce them anymore, all of that.
Well, you know, we used to carry a lot of junk when we were going to MVP Summit and other conferences.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I remember some people had six phones.
Six or more.
Or more, yeah. I felt.
You know, I remember having to pull out, I think, at least six phones from a Scotty vest jacket at SeaTac Airport as security was wondering why I had so many phones on me. And so we pulled them all out, and then I put them all back in, and took about 10 minutes to pull them all out, took about a minute to put them all back in, but it was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard to find those phones in the pockets. And you can feel it in your jacket, but you're not sure how to reach into it to get it. So. I find that to be a problem sometimes. I should note, you know, I should go look at this bag of holding, which I assume is named after a Harry Potter.
It's actually, bag of holding is named after, I want to say, Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Because it does have a D20 on it for that. So yeah, it's Dungeons and Dragons, fictional magical item.
Yeah. I want something about the size for an iPad mini. So I'll go take a look to see if they've got like a smaller version of this somewhere. I'm currently using a bag from Rick Steves, you know, my YouTube travel guru. His company sells a real nice day bag but it's not reinforced, you know. So although that hasn't been a problem, I mean, my iPad mini has survived several trips in that bag, several long trips. So, you know, apparently it's good enough. But I'm always looking for something, so... I'll go take a look at this. I was going to say, you know, speaking of bag of holding, we usually don't discuss much anyway of non-tech books, but I finally got around to listening to or reading Ready Player One, which is going to come out as a movie this spring. And it makes a lot of references to Dungeons and Dragons and various 1980s kind of thing. And I really recommend it to tech geeks and 1980s trivia, not trivia geeks, but other things. So, Ready Player One, I got mine on Audible. Really a fun book, read by Will Wheaton, if you remember Will Wheaton from Star Trek Next Generation. Okay, so that's all we got. Like I said, we didn't have a lot in the way of topics, but we managed to cover almost 30 minutes. So, that brings an end of, what are we at? Movies Podcast number 239, and we'll talk to you next time.